When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Jersey. Hey.
Oh my gosh. It's been a long time since we recorded together.
Yeah, at least a few minutes.
And it's been a long time since we've been in the same room together.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are. We're hanging out together in Columbus, Ohio, and we thought, let's just turn on the mic, because just for old time's sake of recording our conversations around art making, but also because we got things that we have to promote.
Yeah, you know, turns out that promotion is no joke.
Yeah,
it's a legitimate element in the whole system of creating.
Mm.
As long as you want to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want your project to become sustainable and and meaningful to other people, you have to let them know about it. But I'm sure the projects that we want to promote will find authentic and organic ways to weave themselves into what we're talking about as the topic emerges. But having been together for like a couple days now, I mean, you came out with your family to visit, and my wife Anne. Done a lot of stuff together. If I could throw out sort of a top broad wondering about what you're wondering about or what you're thinking about after all the conversations you and I have had, like we do, right?
Yeah.
We don't sit around and talk about like the latest episode of the Kardashians or the latest ball game as much as I love baseball. We wind up talking about all the stuff we talked about on the podcast, on the Lead to Artcast.
it's a huge part of our personalities and also the pattern of our friendship. And it's not like a frozen thing, because we honestly will talk about the Kardashians
sure.
or quirky things, Kaiju number 8 or whatever comes right. up that we're interested in. And, we're not art-making robots. We're whole beings with all kinds of complex ways of relating to ourselves, each other, and the world around us. And that comes up too, but it's a big, powerful, energy-filled concern to be like, yeah, I'm making a thing and I want to know how to, make it the best it can be and also have it make a difference for people I'm trying to reach with it. Mm-hmm. So all this stuff comes up very naturally.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, like our every 2 week or so phone calls we've had over the years since we put the podcast on hiatus, I mean, there aren't just a few of them that end up a lot like an episode of Lean Into Art.
Right.
Yeah,
they really do. They really do. They naturally go there. And I mean, I have a whole observation about that of like coming to an age and a realization of I am what I am. This is the kind of animal I am now, and I'm not going to apologize for it or fight it. I'm going to accept it and try to like cooperate with it. But, just to bring anybody who's like, new to this, we did a podcast for a long time called the Lean Into Art Cast. All the episodes are still online at leanintoart.com. You can subscribe to the podcast there or go back and listen to all the archives. There's a lot of material there. So we spent the better part of a decade navigating topics around art making, not just process, but how do you promote, how do you ideate, how do you teach, how do you integrate your projects into a holistic kind of lifestyle so that it's not this thing that you are making these enormous sacrifices for, but it's a thing that feeds into other interests in your life and how the other interests in your life feed into your art. 10 years, you're going to talk about a lot of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing. It's like, that's what we're talking about. That's what our relationship, that's where it began. We put the podcast on hiatus, 3-4 years ago? 5 years ago? Something like that.
Yeah, I have to look back. I think it might be 3 years ago.
Okay.
As of like May or June.
And now we're, sort of dusting the old mic off to do this again and capture the conversations that we're having already. So, yes, been together for a week now and talking about all this stuff. So, going back to the initial question, what are some of the reflections or wonderings that are, like, knocking around in your head after a few days together?
Well, I think what I've brought is not dissimilar to something you're dealing with, which is promoting a significant project, right? Mm-hmm. So something that you've put a lot of work into. For me, it's the game Word Turtle Island, and I have released it into early access as of like 3 weeks ago. And, you know, I'm still working on, you know, getting the word out and getting a footing and starting to get those initial trickle of players from, you know, paying customers in on it, where it's like, you know, a few hundred have played it over the years of developing and research. But like, you know, this is a different stage. So, and, you know, like engaging with it. So I know let's see, I'll do my best to not sort of backpedal and contextualize in a way that like reduces the power of my words and stuff, right? But like, I do try to leave room for people to have different understandings and different perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. And it's okay if you're someone who fits in areas that I don't fit in, that's okay, we're different and that's fine. You need different strategies than I need, but like, I don't really show up with the energy of I'm, you know, even though I care with all my being for this thing to get out in the world and like have it make sense and reach its audience, it's not something that when I think about it or when I act upon the work of putting the word out there, where I am feeling that I set that anxiety, I set that anxiousness, I set the whole like worry and fear aside, because I want to show up with like this is the thing I made out of, you know, love and all kinds of stuff that came along with it. I want that to be the signal out in the world. I want that to be the lead. And then with a little subtext of like, and if you're curious too about like how it got made and who's behind it, right? That's cool too, but that's not my emphasis. Anyway, and so that's like a huge thing on my mind. And so we've chatted about that a bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I coincidentally, not coincidentally, why might that be a relevant topic for you?
Well, yeah, because I happen to have a book coming out at the time of this recording, just like a month or so away. And it's a book called The Inscrutable Case, The Inscrutable Dr. Bear and the Case of the Two-Faced Statue, which comes out in September of 2024. Worked on it for 2 years. Spent another year getting it ready for press. And so, like, this has been a long gestation period, right? Mm. And it's a character that I have been noodling with for the better part of a decade, and actually more like 20 years if you count how many times he's appeared in the backgrounds of my comics. So, yeah, infused with a ton of personal energy, purpose, and meaning. And I just got back from the American Library Association conference where I told my publisher, Spike Trotman of Iron Circus Comics, I'm like, I'm here to work. Get me in spaces where I can talk to people about this book. I'm not looking at this as a free trip to San Diego. I don't care about being in San Diego. That is very low on my priorities. My priorities are to make sure that the people that I need to connect this book with, that I have the time and the space to make that connection, right? Mm. So, yeah, I have a similar kind of, I wouldn't say urgency, but an intensity of purpose behind it. And also a similar, I think, I'm speaking for you now, so feel free to correct me or elaborate on this. Mm-hmm. A similar kind of puzzling over how to do this in a way that feels wholehearted and authentic and not narrow-minded, myopic, blindsiding. I want to leave space for when the conversation happens and it's not for them, and that's okay. Mm. Right? Because when I did an event at ALA where it was like a speed dating thing where I was bouncing from table to table, and I did this playful thing where I made it fun for me, which maybe we can talk about, maybe not. But I saw the difference between, there were some people who would be like, when I would say this one part of the pitch, they'd go, oh, and I'm like, oh yeah, you get it. There's other people who like kind of go, like, that's okay. It's not for you, right? Like, I'm not going to press on that, right? If I say the part that I think is laden with meaning for me, and somebody goes, that's like, that's okay. I can maybe elaborate a little bit, but I'm not going to push on that, right?
I get it. It's, I think it's about not trying to force a connection.
Right.
It's not trying to trick into a transaction.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff, which is a lot of times what marketing can feel like. But I think, you know, we've talked with, this was definitely a topic on the show, on talking about, oh, what was the Dan Pink book that talked about the new kind of sales and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't drive, but to sell as human or
yes,
something.
Yes,
like
I think that to sell as human. Yeah.
Yeah. And it that hit on some pretty relevant things that we've dealt with in the past and certainly right now, where a good marketing can be just part of the service, part of the product itself. And, you know, you're not trying to put your product in someone's hands that it's just not meant for, or mm-hmm. they wouldn't relate to it in a way that would feel worthwhile, you know?
Yeah.
And, there's... But saying that is different than saying, like, and then I know 10 actions to do that right. follow through on that broad brush clarification.
Right. Right. But I mean, I think what I'm trying to describe, at least from that anecdote, is having a somewhat of a loose grasp around it, where it's like I'm showing up with like a real kind of energy. Like, okay, so I had 6 minutes per table of 10 librarians to tell them about my book, and I knew I wanted it to be something where I'm kind of making it as much about them as I can. But that still meant that I had to be in a kind of like really, I would say, dialed up performance mode, to the point where at one point I was at a table with a librarian that I personally knew, and I didn't recognize I was sitting next to them until the end, right? Because I was in that kind of, and they even said like, "Look, you were doing your thing. I get it, right?" Nobody was offended, but I was like, "Oh my gosh, I haven't seen you in 5 years. You were right next to me this whole time, you know." So like, there is a. I want to say an intensity to it, but also a loose grasp around it where when I saw the person go, no, I could go, okay, right? Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah.
It's like the only question I have is like when I encounter that, I think, is it a matter of like vocabulary and emotional packaging that is what I'm missing, or is it really, just not a fit? And those are two different things. Like,
right.
Because the words that I'm feeling and presenting with and the anything like the, putting a game into the storefronts and then posting about it and stuff like that, using, for instance, the right hashtag and what people mean by that. That's been a process I've been honing, right? So, and it's tough. Like, every person you interact with in person is... in a way, like this more wonderfully richer set of possibilities than something that's through, put a message in a bottle and then have it, someone maybe see it or not in a venue like Steam or Google Play or whatnot. And
that's a very different puzzle.
It is. But I've enjoyed the in-person one as well. I mean, I presented Word Turtle Island and, as a part of an educational event, two times, and in a part of a general gaming tabling venue once, and so all told, between those three events, hundreds of people had gone through and interacted with me and the table and the game and all that, and so I would notice like, oh, there's language I thought was clarifying that doesn't seem to land. And
like when you said this game's not for a-holes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And somebody said, wait a minute, I'm an a-hole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. Surprise. Uninclusive. Get out of here. Something about you. Nope. You just... pick a way to describe it. So like saying it's a nature dungeon action shooter, and it's like, well, yeah, some people are like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm into that. I hear those words and they make sense to me. So anyway, like you can, that the same product presented in a different way can land very different.
Yeah.
So that's just a part of the puzzle. I'm not saying I have an answer for this.
Right.
But, like, I have found it easier to recover in a, and at least explore. Like, not even like, oh, and then I landed it. Because even, you know, it wasn't quite yet for sale at that, at those times. So, like, it's not like I'm looking at sales numbers from those events yet. But even with that possibility now, I'm not looking to just force a transaction. I'm just looking for a clear, you know, we talked about a thing. And then mm-hmm. we got to discover. It's like, does this, you know, is there some energy here? Like,
yeah.
you know, where do you go with that? And I bet you must have been able to do that, even though you're, sounds like you went into a, I mean, self-hypnosis.
No, well, I mean, so, but you've been doing this a long time too. Yeah. And you know that, like, even though you get into, like, this kind of, like, sort of,
Performance
mode, yeah. you're kind of operating, like, in a, like, a meta sense. You're watching yourself do a thing.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I went to 15 tables. I knew I watched my presentation adapt after each and every one.
Oh yeah,
right. And that was actually like super fun. That was a really fun part of the process for me. Was like, okay, there were things I said here that I'm not going to say here, right? So, and there were things that when I said this at this table, oh, that got a laugh. I'm going to keep that, and I'm going to lean into it harder in the next table, right?
Yeah, you're like developing material.
Yeah, yeah.
And that material happens to be like an envelope for the project.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, yeah, it's this real separate endeavor. So one thing to take away is that maybe in-person events are a nice venue to, you know, to try that
well,
kind of thing.
It, I mean...
To try material, like a live performance.
I would put a heavy caveat on that for, like, I would say for me, certainly. I feel most at ease when I can have a face-to-face interpersonal connection with a human being. And actually, I'm less interested in doing a performance to a big audience. Like, I would be, I'll do it. I want to sell my book. So, like, if a school, like, for instance, here's a perfect example. There's a school that I've got a visit lined up with this fall for the book. They're going to sell my book, and they're going to have me visit with the kids. It's, I'm doing it totally free of charge so that just for the purpose of selling my book. And they said, well, do you want to do an assembly? Do you want to do a presentation for an assembly? You can put up some slides. You can talk about your process. And I said, I can. I said, or I could do a game show where some of your teachers, some of the kids' favorite teachers could do a drawing game. I'll make it super easy, low risk for the teachers. They don't have to identify as artists. It'll be playful. It'll be gameful. It will reveal some of the principles of cartooning. Mm-hmm. And everybody's going to have a marvelous time. And then they can buy my book, right? Mm. And my contact at the school went, that sounds fantastic, right? Thankfully, not everybody responds that way to when I say the game show. But, like, I also get, like, I would say 30% of the time when I play that card, they go, what? No, you just want to talk. Just go up and talk to people. What you sound, it sounds like what you're doing sounds really risky. Something could go wrong. People get embarrassed. Their pants fall off. Who knows what's going to happen, right?
I hear sad parents behind these words.
But this particular person was like, that sounds marvelous. So, yes, I will do the presentation thing. But before I commit to that, I'm going to say, can I... And I'm borrowing these words from my wife, Anne, who is a brilliant, wonderful woman. I don't just say that because I'm married to her. It's because she... Well, I am biased. But also, I would fight anybody who wants to argue that she's not objectively amazing. But... I had to do a panel recently. I had to moderate a panel, and you know I don't like panels very much. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of... It's one of my quirks, as you've said. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of bias against the whole concept of a panel. I know they can be good. I know they can be entertaining, but generally speaking, broad brush, not a fan of the concept. So, but when I was asked to moderate and I was helping out a pal, I was like, ugh, I'm going to do it. And I said, well, what could you do to make it fun for you? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. For that, just that gentle little nudge to a pivot. And then I did. I pivoted the panel to like a thing that I wanted to do. Everybody had a good time. The audience responded really well to it. And I felt like I didn't compromise something of myself to do the performance. So mm-hmm. yes, I'll do performance for big crowds if they want. Because like I would love to let 500 people know about my book at once. That'd be great. But I'm gonna try to find a way to can I make this so that it's something that I will have fun doing and that I'm not just doing for the sake of, well, I gotta do this thing for my book. Here's my process. I pencil, then I ink, and then I color. You've never seen this before. Nobody's ever seen this before. I'm the first one to bring you the process of comics. It might be. them saying that in the last 15 years, there's been a lot of people talking about the process of comics. This is not a secret. I don't have the secret juice when it comes to this, right?
So, okay. There's, that's an interesting thing. So it's like you may have, okay, so what if in the development of your product you have some element of, you know, uniqueness or discovery, innovation or something. So maybe there'd be something to tell.
Sure.
But yeah, general broad brush comics is not that thing anymore.
Right.
Yeah, it's more widely in the collective vocabulary. Like adding gameful elements to things. Like tons of teachers now. So like back in like 2010, 2011,
right.
You know, adding some gameful elements to a learning experience or to a workshop, it was relatively rare.
Yeah.
And now it's...
There's Kahoot, rare. There's Blukit, there's yeah. like, it's everywhere, right?
Yeah, it's rare if it's not around.
Right.
But then making it fun for you is an interesting signal to say, like, you know, it's a combination of, like, being inclusive and trying to use your unique voice, and that's a method to get there, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
But what about, so, like, how do you, like... You know, okay, so how do I make it fun for me is like an interesting question that so far I think where I've met that is I like learning. I like learning about my project. I mean, not saying like you don't, like you big dog.
Oh, I haven't read a book in like 15 years. It's amazing.
No, so like but depends on like, so I think a lot of folks like learning, but like I think I get a little... I personally recognize that as something I get excited about, and if I can kind of naturally do that with my project, like what I do when every single time I've tabled with it, you know, even presenting it as like, well, this is part of a, you know, game design activity, and then, you know, getting feedback and helping people critically think and compare and whatnot. I enjoy that aspect, and I enjoy the signal I get from, like, you know, learning about the product I'm making. And it's not just, it's like there's different signals that I've tuned into that I find enjoyable, like how can I make this better for more kinds of people? How can I not just make it function, but make it conveyable and communicable? Like, how can I do that? And that's a fun aspect. So like when I have tried doing a little bit of promoted posts, or when I'm working on the store pages for the game, you know, there are elements. I'd come up across new ways to describe it, and I think, oh wow, wait a minute, you know, I'm also my own editor for the most part. I do get help from my brilliant wife, and, you know, Kate Shield Stenzinger, but like, you know, she's also incredibly busy, and, you know, I don't always get that help. So I've had to become a pretty decent editor. And then I think, okay, what just happened here? Why am I excited that I wrote this thing? Because it makes more sense to be in a way that I know will make more sense to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a piece of it. That's something. But I don't know. I think I need to tune further into other aspects of fun. Like, what makes it fun?
Yeah. I mean, and that was like, it's such a simple question, but it, like, the profundity of it was, I mean, in this case, I was really grateful that that day I had a 3-hour drive. Because, like, when she hit me with that, it was like, I need time to process this. And I thankfully did have that time to process, at least to get an intuition of what I think is fun. Mm. Putting into words, very difficult for me. I would say that is... much as I like talking, I feel like you are much more facile at explaining your thinking than I am. It seems to come out of you more, it feels like it comes out of you with more ease than it does with me. I feel like it takes me a lot of words to get to what I'm really thinking. And even when I get there, I'm like, is that it? It's probably not, but it's close, right? So yeah, I had like a vague intuition that play is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And showing up with a non-serious, or informal, playful and emergent attitude. Let's see what happens today. Right? That was what occurred to me when I was in the car that morning. It was like I want to show up and say, let's see what emerges. And when I say see, I mean multimodal. I don't mean what concepts will emerge. I also mean what images emerge. right? And what...
Well, I assume what emotions and other reactions and contributions from other people. Like, probably there's a difference between if there's more energy or less energy from people participating. And so cease is like, that's a pretty big
and
opening for stuff to flow through, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the emergence, I want it to happen is in as many places as I can get it. So, like in the case of this panel, I turned it around so that the audience was having their own discussions for different rounds. Mm-hmm. Let's turn it over to the audience. I want you to answer this question amongst yourselves. Then I'm going to ask, then I have the panel answer this in images. They're going to draw their answers, and then they're going to discuss their answers. And then we'll have Q&A where you can bring the discussion you had together to the panel, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like I wanted the emergence to not just happen on the stage, but, I mean, an emergence would happen in the audience regardless if there was that kind of interpersonal aspect, but I'm trying to encourage more emergence and let that emergence germinate other emergence through the dynamic of them all having the conversation and then bringing that conversation together. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, you're bringing a bunch of stuff that you've practiced to help. It's like you have tools regarding, you know, how you teach and your experience from teaching, preferences for how information can be delivered and consumed and participated with and all that. Like you've brought like an entire separate discipline. I don't want to be that like harsh with boundaries, but like that's definitely a deep area of practice. Now, like so you're drawing connections with that other thing, and I just wonder if that's like a repeatable thing for me or for other people too.
Yeah.
It's like when you have something to share, it's like, well, what else do you do that works for you? Mm-hmm. That works for other people, right? Like, do you host awesome parties? Do you do teaching as an artist, or do you podcast or stream, or, you know, what other things do you do that relate to other people that hopefully you have fun with?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and having it, naturally, it, like you're pointing out, part of how I arrived at identifying at least like a cursory evaluation of what my fun is came from 17 years of working as a teaching artist and developing my style as a teaching artist, right? Because I wasn't always doing it the way I'm doing it now, naturally. God, I hope not, right? So that's part of the puzzle there is like, it's not, I don't think it's a, even for me now, it's not an easy lift to clearly articulate what I find fun, right? But having, again, an intuition about it and listening to that intuition and trusting that intuition, I think has served me well so far as I'm starting to play with it.
Yeah, like, so you followed questions and listening to yourself. So, like, you can use inclusion, like, back at yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And saying, like, instead of, I feel I have a task of marketing and or communicating to a crowd or whatever the heck I have in front of me, and you can engage with it in a way that says, I feel upset about it in this way. It's like I'm going to come up short or something. and I'm like, well, how do I not, like, well, I could do it different. I can listen to that upset feeling and go toward better feelings, like what's fun.
Yeah, perfectly said. Because what happened was when people came up to me after that panel and said, that was a really cool way of doing a panel. I've never seen that done before. And I was like, oh, they're like, is this something you've done before? Did you just come up with this? And I'm like, yeah, I came up with it this morning. And they were like, well, it was really fun. And I'm like, yeah, you know what the secret is? I effing hate panels. I said, I just didn't want to do a panel. And they're like, so your joy comes from your hatred of another thing? I'm like, I wouldn't put it that way. But it's kind of like I identified what my pain was and said, let's not go there. Let's not go that way. And I'm not going to submit myself to it because that is the current cultural assumption of how you show your...
your grit and your tenacity.
Yes.
Like, oh, is that pain? Well, just suffer.
Right.
Just
or go. This is what you do to show that you are an expert in the field. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like I have a hypothesis that there's lots of ways to be indispensable.
So you met it, and I think I mean, so good for you. You met it that day.
Yeah.
But now you still have more days to market.
I know.
So, so I'm impressed beyond belief with, I mean, all kinds of ways, you know, watching you do what you do. But then, yeah, now I'm also thinking, I'm also hoping for that kind of conversation, that kind of intuition and combining it, because yeah, I mean, it's sure. I can break stuff down. I think I just make like plausible BS. Like I can craft a whole village of plausible BS really fast, and it looks like science did it or something. But like, right. Yeah, no, it just.
No. Okay, but can we take one step aside, though, and talk about this? Because I think this is something you and I both share as a personal experience, is that even though, like, I think the biggest hurdle to me doing that move that morning is that I have tried it in a variety of settings, and I have been met by confusion, quizzicalness, and sometimes outright hostility. I've had people react very, how do I put it? Like they visibly and purposefully roll their eyes at me when I try to make a move like that. So some of the inhibition I had was, oh my God, here I go again. I'm going to walk into a space and I'm going to bring my goofy, joyful Dr. Teeth self to this moment. And they're going to go, oh, right? Somebody's going to go, like I actually had a person once lean their head back and go like, oh, at the way I showed up. And then my friends were like, who are these awful people? I'm like, there's lots of different kinds of people in the world. Oh, we're not for everybody.
Yeah. And is there, so there are people who are in a situation of low trust.
Yeah.
This is the I've dealt with a lot of adults doing that in my, whatever, 6 years at a big retailer doing innovative stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, you bring people together to sort of explore their idea, and they're not used to it because, you know, I have authority, I'm in the hierarchy, what I say is what must be done and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, well, what if it's not? What if there's more to it? What if there's something else beyond that? That this is a barrier that we can't see past unless we explore, and then do that in a thoughtful way where we can test our ideas further and then have a credible perspective and whatever, and then inviting people on that journey had a similar.
Now, see, when you start saying stuff like that, it's like I'm climbing to the top of the roller coaster. I'm like, oh, we're about to go down. But I can also see the people who are like, oh, God, we're about to go down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, right, it sounds exciting to you.
Yes, right? Yes, it does.
And it is fun for people who are wired in a certain way. But, like, you do work that's collaborative and communicative and dealing with a lot of different people, different needs. And, you know, it's easy to characterize other needs as just sort of a, you know, a problem. Those needs are a problem. And I don't think we're at our best when we're doing that, you know? Yeah. And I've done it too. Because, like, yeah, I've had so many people harumph when I try to playfully bring energy to adults in a room full of, you know, dry erase boards and sticky notes and stuff. And they're like, I've seen designers do this before. Like, you know, this is never good use of my time. And, you know, or I only believe in math, and math is the only truth in the world, and we can't, you know, use soft science to navigate some things and do something better or whatever. And it's like, you know, yeah, I've had some hard audiences too. And, yeah. And like, to me, like, that's just the signal of there isn't trust. There's no trust in that relate. That's no safety also, right?
Yeah.
So that person doesn't feel safe to try and be open, because in some context they're gonna, you know, sit on the ground with a puppy at some point and it'll like do anything from lick them or poop on them and they'll be happy with all the outcomes.
Yeah, that's right.
Where that there's nothing that awkward happening in the meeting of sticky notes and, you know, dry erase boards, but they act like it's, you know, it's very scary. And I've learned that.
Okay, but so I'm curious, like, how you have managed to, like, approach having been through some really, you have had, I'm not going to talk out of school and bring stories that you've shared with me to the mic, but you've shared some really difficult stories about being in situations with people with a significant amount of power and bringing your authentic self and it not being met well. Yeah. So how are you thinking about that now with promoting your game to potentially a global audience, right? I mean, you're trying to hit like millions of people with this thing. How are you thinking of, is that even part of your thinking, or have you sort of, I don't know, come to terms with that, healed that, made it less of a sting in your mind?
I mean, it's like a power imbalance issue where I don't have a huge power imbalance between me and my audience right now, and also between in either direction, right? Mm. Other than, so there's a huge power imbalance between the venues and me that I'm using to present, and maybe some of the tools I have explored.
Okay.
And then I'm realizing, like, oh, that's part of a different culture, and that's not for me at this current stage of my business and product, right?
Mm.
So when someone's like, yep, yeah, that'll be $200 or $1,000, please, and I'm like, yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
Exactly. That's how we say that in Minnesota. I was at a grocery store here, and someone looked at, you know, because I bought an adult beverage, and it's normal to get, you know, someone look at your license, even at my age, I guess. and they're like, oh, Minnesota, and I'm like, I said, yeah, you betcha, and I just gave it to them. I'm like, here you go, here's one for free.
Say the line, Bart. I didn't do it.
Yeah. I did it. So, let's see. Where are we going?
The power imbalance is not... Yeah, that's not at play.
Yeah, that's not at play. It's other than, like, well, in the broad brush, which is daunting that there's this huge gap between, you know, reaching more people. Mm. And I guess I can say, well, part of what bridges that gap for me or recontextualizes it is... I don't have the same cultural bias that I think a lot of folks doing business stuff have, and it depends on who they are. I don't mean to insult y'all or whatever. If you're a super ethical MBA and you know, care about the environment and humans and all that stuff and want fair labor practices, et cetera, cool, good, awesome. We're on the same page. We just study different stuff. That's awesome. Mm. I'm working to reasonably grow a business. That's it. I don't care about hypergrowth, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we have a huge amount of our culture that is very distorted about the loudness of the myths and ideas and culture surrounding hypergrowth.
Yeah.
And the whole world is a slot machine. I do not see it as that.
Right.
And I don't want to perpetuate it, even if I would try to avoid it. If I was like, yeah, oh, no, the whole world is a slot machine. I'd be like, well, it's got to be some part of the world that's not a slot machine.
I think that's a hard thing to discuss without... Like, I've had this very similar conversations with people, and I watch a little bit of distrust emerge where they start to... Like, I think they read what I'm saying as self-deprecation. Mm. And they'll say, no. You have every chance of hitting it big with this. You could have a movie made. I'm like, well, maybe. I'm not saying that it's not impossible, but it's, like, not even on my radar. It's like, it's I'm not thinking about, like, this intellectual property is going to be the thing that my children's children's children are going to be benefiting from. Mm-hmm. I don't have children, but you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I'm thinking, like, is it going to be something that is nourishing to me to make, nourishing to the audience to experience, and will I get a fair compensation for the effort that I put in? And yes, I would like a little bit of passive income off that. I would like to make royalties. Royalties are awesome, right? But I don't think that this has to be the next mega movie, video game, toy franchise. If it happens, I will gladly take the money.
Yeah.
And I'm going to donate it to a whole bunch of cat shelters, you know? And possibly some, like, different organizations looking for sustainable ways to, like, make, like, meat-free foods.
Mm.
But I'm not looking forward to, like, I don't want to be Disney, right?
Gotcha. But there's a huge gap between these ideas, right?
So, sure.
Like, I guess, how could I do... This is something I should practice you finding language about.
Mm.
So, like, the scale of difference between an individual who's done something that they can make a good trade of it, mm-hmm. right? And that means, like, maybe have enough income to do a variety of things of comfort is way different than, like, billionaire income.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
Right.
And so there's a huge, like, amount of possibilities way before that. And that's so, like, seeking the hockey stick growth, hyper growth pattern, which I've purposefully not taken investors in this, right? I think mm-hmm. I could have pitched at a few different junctures, but, like, I'm not interested in that because I don't want to be guided by those beliefs and those systems.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I want to make a successful business of it, right?
Sure.
Like, I'm looking to, you know, I look at it as I'm launching the flagship product of the relaunch of my business. And yeah. And I absolutely am seeking to, you know, do interesting things with what I hope becomes the income through this. But also, I'm not looking to be Disney or bought by Disney or, you know, acquisition is not my goal with this.
Right. Yeah, and what I'm trying to describe is I'm not talking about, like, breaking even. I've been breaking even for a long time. Mm. I don't recommend it. I mean, it's better than not breaking even. Yeah. but it's been a tough life, right? Yeah. I've had to make a lot of sacrifices to keep doing this thing that I'm doing. And I would love it if, like, so success for me is I have enough income coming in from the first book that I don't have to, that I can say no to a lot of things, so I can do this another book and another book and another book for like the next 15, 20 years. Mm. That's success for me. Like, if all the bills are paid, I've got savings, so like if I have universe forbid, I have some kind of accident that prevents me from working anymore, I don't have to panic, right? Mm. I would love that. And that's a pretty substantial amount of money to achieve that kind of security.
It is. But like also, I feel like it's achievable with, you know, like with reasonable goals, reasonable actions, solving problems, keeping, you know, continuing to iterate on the whole system of things around making a product.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I do believe it's achievable. Yeah. I think that even thinking about like, and then Disney will buy my character and make cartoons about it, and then I'm successful. Like, that's... I really don't want to insult anybody who's offering me that, because I know they're wishing me well.
Yeah.
But it sounds silly to me. It really sounds like you're gonna put your bear on the moon. It's gonna go to carve his face on the moon, and I'm like, why would I want that?
Yes. It'd be a huge bummer to have to fund certain actions that would be of that scale of you know.
Yeah.
What some would see success.
Right? Now, let me back up, because like if there was an animated series made, that would employ a lot of artists, and that would be really awesome.
That's true.
But again, that's not my goal. My goal is to provide for my family, figure out how to make my thing work so that children who need to hear what's in these stories can feel seen and heard. That's my top priority. Mm-hmm. Everything else is secondary to that. If those things, other things happen, awesome. Thumbs up. But that's not what I'm strategizing around. I'm strategizing around making this book successful to the extent that it brings in passive income so I can make more books.
Right on, man. Right on. Is that it? I don't know.
Boom, that's a podcast.
Yeah, boom, that's a podcast. Because like, it's either that or we just got, like, my shovel hit some bricks, but I'm ready to throw a stick of dynamite so we can go deeper. You know what I mean?
Like, we got time if we want to go a little bit deeper.
So, fine. Bonus level. I wonder how subtle the difference is, because if you're looking at things that are related to, you know, how did we get into this circumstance as a society, and the, you know, incredibly wealthy haves and have nots and all that stuff, I mean, there's a lot of a lot of tunnels to get pulled down, and it's easy to look at certain things and say all big business success is poisonous, right? Mm-hmm. But then I do think, like, I don't know, thankfully I listen to a lot of different voices out in the world and stuff, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, there's kind of this other path that's not the, you know, because I literally was on a team at a certain business that was, like, our goal, we were tasked with essentially trying to make $1 billion businesses, right? Mm-hmm. And so we talked them down. You know, we were like, you know, that's a pretty unrealistic goal, right? Let's look at the numbers. And then also, like, what happens when people do that and stuff. And so but we still had a pretty wildly aggressive trajectory that we were supposed to essentially test business hypotheses that were meant to be seeing, like, within the first couple of years of their existence, like a $200 million, you know, profit or something like that. But it was part of how we tested ideas. And so, like, you know, like that whole stuff I've talked about on Lean Into Art was kind of, some of it was informed by that, by, like, you know, minimum viable product, whatever, minimum lovable product, and trying to filter through ideas with enough strategy and pick the right things and test them and stuff. I'm infused with some of that practice. I give a crap about the extreme unrealistic aspects of that. But part of me is like, okay, I've done this now. I'm going to try to do for others. I want to try to do this for me. And like, I see how there's a path to, like, you know, learn and keep adapting and overcome my own weaknesses that I've had. Like, the version of me as a teen who was like scared, totally scared of being an artist, even though that's what I told myself I was going to be forever. And I let the guidance counselor talk me out of it, right? That's the short story. And you know,
man, it is. I mean, I wonder if that's even worth going into just a little bit, is talking about that younger version of ourselves, because I think we both had experiences that I didn't let them talk me out of it, but I did let it, like, that negative experience color my approach to art making for, like, the next 30 years almost. You know, and it wasn't until, like, the last, like, 2 or 3 years where I really started to question the hypothesis that guidance counselor put in front of me. You know, so yeah. I don't know. I wonder if you'd say something about that. Like, how do I put this in a way that doesn't sound like a silly, like, what would you tell young Rob? But what's a difference? What are some fundamental differences between the way that Rob saw the world and the current Rob sees the world? Because you can't change who he is anyway. So don't go giving him advice. He needed to be who he was so you could be who you are.
Yeah. Let's see. He needed more safety. You know, he just needed somewhere to explore and like find out that wasn't entirely true. Like, so there was some truth to what the guidance counselor said, but it was like, if you essentially go forth with your skills and make trade with them in the particular way that he was showing me in the Occupational Outlook Handbook.
I'm sorry. Yeah. That was a contemptuous laugh. Oh my goodness, those things have function, they have utility, but holy moly.
it was a huge bummer, and he was convincing as heck, right? I wasn't ready for a pitch or a defense for where I wanted to go.
Of course not.
I let my earnest mouth fly, and I said, I want to be an artist. He's like, do you mean a commercial artist? Flip, flip, flip. And he's pointing at the, like, well, you could be this or that or whatever. Someday, after 10 years in the industry, you might be able to make a junior art director. And I was like, oh my word, that's not enough money per year to, like, have. He's like, do you want to have a car? Do you want to have a house? Do you want to have a family? How are you going to do it with that?
Oh, that's so funny. So I got a very similar spiel, but my answer was, I guess I won't have a family. I guess I won't have a car. Up yours. I'm not gonna subscribe to this system. I'm gonna find my way. And like, I had such a chip on my shoulder about that for a long time. I'm like, I'm going to like, in this very, and you've known me a long time. You've seen this part of me that's very grandiose. And when I get like all like, yeah, you have.
I have. It's satisfying. I'm like, look at this righteous jersey.
Oh,
emerge.
Oh, and I'm like, he was like a Knight Templar. He was like, I am here fighting the holy battle for art. And that was an energy that really sustained me.
Yeah.
But it is no longer functional in me. Yeah. But I want to step back. You said he needed to feel safe. So tell me what safety looks like for you now. Use words to describe, what do you mean by feeling safe to do the explorations that you're doing?
Let's see. Well, I think it's a combination of having the space to learn, apply what I learn, and to do so in a wholehearted earnestness that lets me bring some kind of joy or affect others.
What's the space? Say more.
It's time and money.
Mm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And it's you know, I mean, whatever. So, like, I'm someone who, like, I bought my own clothes since age 13, right?
Mm-hmm.
I, et cetera. Moved out when I was 16, and, right? So, like, that stuff, when that guidance counselor was giving me that spiel, it was like, not that many months before I moved out.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I got to find a way to survive, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, and so what safety looks like is it's also the extending the openness to learn from others and like find common ground through other safety too. You know what I mean? Like to where if you're taught that like, oh, you can only make money doing a thing that someone else told you to do, you know, that's not the right circumstance for someone who wants to, you know, invent, explore, and express and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, but also, you don't invent, explore, and express by being in a bubble or a hostile, you know, hill that's hard to reach, you know? Like,
yeah.
You need to be reachable. You need to be connected.
Maslow's hierarchy is a thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's no joke. As somebody who's worked in schools with kids who are very low on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, they cannot apply themselves to my lessons the way kids who are in very well-funded, you know, the kids who are like well-fed, they are supported, they are showing up, as a teaching friend of mine said, they're showing up ready to learn, right? And if you are in an environment where you don't have the capacity to have that kind of expansive and abundant view to do that kind of exploring, that's tough. That's really hard.
It is. And here's the thing where like one of the my, you know, trying to figure out lessons I've learned along the way, making Word Turtle Island for 2.5 years, and trying to apply the things I learned in different industries and stuff as a, you know, human-centered, systemic-minded designer. There's something about having enough space to learn and that you can turn that back into how you benefit your project or product and how that also is making it better for others. Or it's like this whole set of feedback loops of like, well, can I make it? Am I ready to make this thing? Does this thing seem like it, I can, you know, get paid to do it? And also, is it going to, you know, be fulfilling for others and for me and all that stuff? And, you know, feasible, viable, and desirable. And, like, the space to do it. Like, if I would have cut off Word Turtle Island 6 weeks, 6 months, a year into development, it wouldn't have become what it needed to become. So it's almost like some creative efforts and some projects and some things that we express into the world need that safe space to then become what they need to become. Through applied effort and guidance. It's not passive. I didn't just watch it. I didn't just let it grow like something on a...
Yeah, it was like sea monkeys. You just like, you put it in a tank of water and just like checked it every day.
And that's the title of my my book that's going to fund all the Lamborghinis in my garage.
Your car doors are going to go every which way.
Yep.
They're going to flap like bird wings. Oh my God. No, but I do think that that is... How do I... This is a conversation I hear happening with the high schoolers that I work with where their guidance counselors are really pushing on them to like, okay, you want to be an artist, but you got to have a job. Do you have a job? Do you have, like, even if it's at Arby's, as long as you have, if you're paying the bills, then you can pursue your art. And like, part of me bristles at that a little bit. So I'm like, okay, that's really kind of like giving them a fear-based answer. But I do think there is a truth that's embedded in there. It's like, you can't negotiate for yourself and advocate for yourself if you're in a position of urgency and panic. Right?
And it's hard to learn and adapt. Like, and how, or even if you did learn, you're like, wow, that didn't work. And I actually kind of see why it didn't work. I made in my spare time, I made a game or an album or something, and then you learn from it.
Yeah.
And then you don't have the resources to learn, to make use of what you learned.
Yeah.
That is like the ingredient I was able to have in this project, and I wish I could have somehow described that, like, find spaces where that can happen for the younger Rob. And yeah, he would have done all kinds of weird stuff with it, but
you know. Yeah, and I think what you're describing, I think for me, feels like an antidote to the stance of I gotta make this work for me. Now, we've been having this conversation a lot this week, is like, there is an element to, we both want our things to work. I want my book to work. I want it to be a quote-unquote success in that I want enough people to buy it that I don't have to beg a publisher to let me make another book, right?
Yeah.
Not that I had to beg Spike. Spike was awesome. I have nothing but wonderful things to say about working with Iron Circus. But what I mean is like shopping things around and hoping something hits, right? And tailoring my pitches for like, this editor kind of likes this, so I'm going to spin it this way, right? Like that kind of finagling is, I understand it's part of the gig. It's exhausting. I want something to be successful enough that I'm like, can I do another one? And people are like, yes!
So that means like being able to, you know, somehow get enough success to continue perpetuating investing in your own success.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Perfectly said. But at the same time, I feel like there's something that I get really nervous and suspicious of when that energy gets too urgent, when it gets too panicked, and it's speaking from a rung lower on Maslow's hierarchy. I can want it, and I can want it bad, but if I go, oh Jesus, if this doesn't work, right, that's the part where I go like, ooh, I don't trust that voice. That voice scares me. I don't make good decisions when I'm in that headspace. Right, there's a thing I put in Dr. Bear. It was like a sort of like an internal rule that I don't expect anybody to pick up on when they read the book. Nobody, I'm not going to high five you if you point this out, because it was not the point.
It was, I refuse it.
Well, no, it's just what I'm saying is like, yeah, I put it in as a structural thing for me. Yeah. It wasn't something to be discovered. It's not the Da Vinci Code. I'm not. There's no genius thing. It's an entertainment. Okay, it's a book that's meant to entertain. Mm-hmm. But I said, every time Dr. Bear eats, he makes better decisions, and he speaks more honestly. So there's like several moments in the book where he'll like eat something, and then suddenly he'll say something that reveals like a truth about himself, but he doesn't realize he's doing it. And so it's like, when he's hungry and he's under-resourced, he acts more like an a-hole. But when he eats a little bit of soup, he becomes a little bit more of a pleasant dude.
That's okay. So the urgency, so you found a way to put that into the book in a way,
yeah,
where it's like we're not able to meet circumstance when we're, you know, depleted by urgency and fear and scarcity and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So somehow it's like, yeah, if you're resourced enough, so the fear isn't necessarily based out of, you know, the stuff in your world and environment. It's inside you, right? It's inside. Yeah. It's messages you've internalized and are just sort of, you know, your voices in your head being what they are. That's a huge thing I've tried to work with Word Turtle Island, is that, you know, I've had lots of ups and downs along the whole creative path to make it where it is right now. And I realized that these negative voices, I don't think I can shut them up. I honestly don't. Like, I actually thought, like, oh, as you know, younger, I'll go to therapy, I'll read books, I'll do practices, I'll meditate, I'll do, you know, all the things, and then they'll just go away.
And then I'll be like Qui-Gon sitting peacefully on the bridge of the, you know, the droid ship waiting to do negotiations.
And so here's my guess, is that Qui-Gon is like, you know, has plenty of voices in his head if it's operating like a human brain that has a history of gathering ups and downs and even healed injuries, it's like it can come up and be like, well, you know, don't forget to be scared about, you know, doing anything with your art or showing who you are through your art or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I just think like, okay, they're like old friends now, and I'm like, okay, have a seat, and you just, you know, if you're going to really help me, you can sit closer to the front.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you just got to go grab a seat in the back and,
you know, I love that image. I really love that image. I've had very similar conversations with those pieces of myself in a very, like almost the exact same way, where I'm like, if the voice is too urgent, I'll say, I hear you, I'll handle this, right? Like, I would literally say, like, I gotcha. I know you're scared. And I'm in charge, so I'll handle it. Or if it's like, is this something where you're warning me that I'm in potential danger? And I'll listen. Mm. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thanks for the heads up. You know, it's like I'm going to get out of this situation.
It can totally be, like, it may have a job still. It may be showing up for work and have something useful to contribute.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, not always, because of where it comes from and what it's trying to do. And you have other work that it's not really well suited for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what are we going to do with, let's see, negativity, the voices, the urgency, So it's hard when I meet that in the world, because I can't take someone and put them in the backseat of my brain, right? But like when that voice shows up in my head, I've got a whole habit to deal with that.
Yeah.
But if someone is like, you know, trying to blurt advice at me, that it's like, well, you're over 50, you got to do this and that, or you're, you know, you got.
This came up actually. We were having a conversation with a local friend of mine who said something to me that was along the lines of that. I won't ask you to remember what it was, but I wonder if you remember me saying to them, "What a funny thing to say to me."
Yeah.
And that was exactly me just saying, like, you can go to the back of the car. And it didn't really seem to, like, cause any negative repercussions. He just kept moving on, right?
Yeah, he was like, yeah, okay.
He was telling me how the world works, and I went, what a strange thing to say. That's interesting. Okay.
I mean, I think he felt heard and was like, he was ready to keep rolling. Yeah, so I don't know. I honestly, that's part of this whole recording is that, like, I mean, I don't have it figured out. I don't have a, you know, an umpteen step plan or even like the younger me trying to prevent myself from the scaredness, from the, you know, the difficulty of facing a long story and telling something and like, oh, I better outline the heck out of this. I better outline it more. I better draw, come up with the, oh, there's not enough backstory for this. I don't think I can backstory my way out of this, you know, like I just need to meet interesting problems and try to like make genuine connections with people and say, I've got something for you if you're feeling it too, you know? Mm-hmm.
Okay. The podcast won't air until like September, but I was on a podcast interview where the interviewer asked me, what do you hope for with your book?
Oh.
And I was really grateful for that question because I was like, I have not had an opportunity to put this into words yet. So let me ask you to say, I'll put you in the same hot seat. What do you hope for with Word Turtle Island?
I hope to make a lot of people just have a really good time. I love that. This is a kind of game where, so you can, let's see. So how do I describe it? It's both cozy and a roguelite action game. Like, so you literally battle creatures in dungeons, but you're rescuing books and rescuing these little creatures who I call readers, and then you're back in this library book sanctuary, and then you're just helping them, right? But you level up whether you're doing battle or whether you're not doing battle, and then all these cool things that, like, as I made this, you know, infused with, like, I believe in boldly facing problems. I believe in the power of words, and books are awesome. I love libraries. And I also think that we can face down a lot of things through using our words and whatnot. But, like, what it, let's see. And what I hope, so, like, I hope, like, that creation and that voice, like, meets its people. That I've, like, the, like, scratching the surface, like, I've seen already in person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want it to meet a lot of people. Like, let's say, I don't know, a few hundred thousand people, right? Yeah. That'd be awesome.
That'd be terrific.
And then I'll be able to make some other cool and weird stuff. And I can, you know, hire some collaborators. So I'm hoping that. I'm hoping someone gets inspired to make a rap.
Wait a minute, a rap? Like, yeah. You mean like,
so like words are really important in the game.
Oh, and
so
yeah, you're
words
right.
Keep showing up and they make me laugh a lot. So like one, and there's one of the theme, like, things in the game, like as you're fighting your way through, you know, a bunch of creatures that are attacking a book, you're trying to save the book, and all of a sudden there's themes of words that come up, and one of them is like rhymes, or so it could be like rhymes with potato or rhymes with, you know, anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, diploma, cup, whatever. And it's like, and then all of a sudden you're like, what rhymes with that? And I want someone to be like, I'm gonna make a poem out of that. That's fun, right?
Yeah.
And there's another thing that I would also take as like an equal honor fun thing is that every book in the game has a title, and so there's some really funny titles that come up.
Yeah.
So like you know, I don't know, like
meeting that player who's like, this is my favorite book title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That'd be funny. Or if someone like wrote a blog post with that book title, or like wrote a book with that book, I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And so to be, you know, getting that creative voice out there, being supported by the audience, and then going where that leads next,
right? Mm-hmm.
The delightful creative independence that brings.
That all sounds
that's
good.
That's what I hope.
Mm.
How about you? So I assume you answered this on a podcast. Is there any way where you could answer the question differently?
Yeah, or more elegantly. Yeah.
I don't know.
I love that idea of like 200,000 people reading the book. That would be, that's a really nice number. That's a number that translates into, hey, I could take it. I could go down to like teaching 5 hours a week and you know, focusing a lot on my creative pursuits. So there's that. But I think for me, a big motivation in the making of this book was, it was really, I mean, like a lot of authors say, like, I wrote it for me, you know, and I did, but I wrote it for the 11-year-old me who was confused about a world that was telling him that masculinity and manliness was physically overcoming people. Mm. And I know Back to the Future isn't about teaching a guy to beat people up so he can get married, but as an 11-year-old, that's how I internalized the message. And the Dr. Bear provides clarification for that 11-year-old boy who was confused, who hated hitting people, but felt like the world was saying, the only way you're going to be on top is if you hit people. So I hope that if there are young people who are dealing with the same kind of confusion in the world, and unfortunately, we still do. I think you and I travel in gentler circles, mm-hmm. but I work in a lot of different kinds of schools, and there is a lot of anachronistic, what I would call anachronistic and very unproductive messaging around what being a good man is. And I feel like a very visceral and personal need for that kind of story to exist more in a way that is not didactic, it's entertaining, but it also provides an image. Because that's another thing about me personally, is that I don't like to prescribe, but I like to inspire, right? If I can provide an image for you to consider possibility, I'm not saying be me, I'm saying here I am to show that the world is a little bit more broader than maybe you assumed. And if you're confused about it, good. That means that'll lead to hopefully curiosity and new opportunity for you. I want that really bad. And that would be another reason for 200,000 copies. That's 200,000 kids where that potentially could be supportive to them. Not that I wrote the book to like out of a sense of altruism, because it also was very... You can have lots of reasons for doing something, Rob. You can have multiple reasons.
You only get one reason to
do anything. Nope. I call BS on that. I'm going to say that I wanted to help children, and I wanted to make me happy, I wanted to make me laugh, and I wanted it to make me money.
So funny. I think I blacked out and became devil's advocate. I truly am disappointed in myself.
No, but you're right. That is the kind of thing where people think, like, it has to be... The messaging has to be so crystal clear, and it does. Clarity is a thing, right? Clarity can also include complexity.
You can have clear answers, or you could have clear questions.
Yeah.
And you can have clear, you know, ways of framing the ideas.
Yeah.
And you know, through characters, through circumstance and interpersonal relationships and actions that they take and how they say things and all that. Like, there's so many ways to have the clarity.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
But yeah, so I want all those things. I'm greedy.
I love this. So anytime the phrase I want comes out of my mouth, I think I'm, because of someone, I forget who said this, but it's like, that's the beginning of a Disney lead character song, right?
Sure.
Like, I want, so this is...
I want to be where the people are. I want to see them dancing, walking around on those, what do you call them, feet? Yeah.
Yep. Keep on singing.
That's my I want song, sure. Yeah. And then after a few travails and making some friends along the way, Daddy will give me permission to be a person. Oh, man. No, we always have to look at anything that's broadly popular with derision and suspicion, right? Oh, I hate Star Wars. Yes.
Yeah. No, it's I love it because it's like, if I tell my wife this, I'm like, I'm singing my Disney princess song sometimes, and I don't mind that. It's okay.
Yeah, know? It's totally okay.
It's fine. It's important. Because we make the things, and there's so much that goes into it. Like, there's, even with all your practice in this general circumstance that is comics, There had to have been unique lessons and things that you had to overcome to get that book into where it's at right now. Right.
And, to not try to write a book on marketing right now. There's a reason that those I Want songs are so memorable, because they're clear. They clarify motivation of a character.
Yeah. And it's identifiable. Like, someone's like, you know, like, wait a minute, I have huge sympathy. I want stuff too, you know?
Right.
I want a new, whatever, boombox to listen to my Disney princess songs on.
No. You know, I mean, as far as like, what kind of things do I want in my life? Like, what things would I get to, like, make my life better if I actually had, like, enough money that I didn't have to worry about next year?
This is fun.
Yeah. That's a really tricky. Okay. This is going to be grim, and this is where we get back to this idea of, well, I mean grim in the sense that I am what I am, right? And one of the wonderful and scary things about heading into the time of life that we're heading into is I'm noticing that there's things where it's like, I don't think I can change that now, right? It's like it comes with my drawing. I think I'm a pretty okay artist. I think I'm good at this thing. But there's an element of it where it's like, oh, I'm not going to get much better than this. This is the way I draw now, right? And it's like, for better or worse. Maybe it's better. Sometimes it's worse. I'm not saying, I'm not like, it's not my call to really judge this, but there's an element of like, yeah, this is what I'm baked when it comes to this. There's going to be small improvements. There's going to be all sorts of adjustments, but huge skill acquisition in terms of my illustration work, probably not in the cards. Maybe I'll be surprised, right? Mm. But like, and like certain things like, what we discovered when I started messing around with ceramics. And I'm like, I'm just making art without purpose or expectations. Uh-oh, I have a product. I made products. How did that happen? I wasn't supposed to make products, right? And it's like, oh, yeah, I am the kind of beast that I am. So the things that, like, I'm actually applying for a grant, like, to, like, fund my business and, like, give me, like, a little bit more, like, resources. Mm-hmm. And it's all just like, I want a big flat. Scanner. I want like $1,000 11x17 flatbed scanner. That would be awesome. I want a slab roller for clay, right? I want like big fancy tools to make cooler stuff, right? Like that's the stuff. I want to get a 24-inch Cintiq, right? Mm. I played with them. I had a taste, Rob.
Oh yeah. This is like you're announcing what's in the Showcase Showdown. The Price is Right. It's like the artist version of Price is Right. And I'm like, yeah, I like that setup. I don't know. I bid on that one.
I mean, but another thing, I mean, if I really want to start getting lofty, I would love to have a place in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan to like go for like a week. Like, oh, I've got a little cabin, sure. a little cottage. Doesn't have to be a cabin. A cottage will do. I don't have the money to buy a cottage, but if I had like $30,000, I could say, I'm going to put that into a cottage on Lake Superior. Yeah. That would be pretty cool.
Yep.
What about you?
Oh, I mean, I do gravitate toward, you know, tools to make more cool stuff.
Yeah.
And especially in different, like, physical things. I have not, and so, again, I would say it's a little dabbling of tools, but also... I want to approve my own funding to do more weird stuff. Like, stuff that's, like, not guaranteed to make money.
Right? Yeah.
Like, I want to... I would really like to do some location-based entertainment stuff. I think that's the, like, the formal term of it, right?
Okay.
Where, because of my job at a certain gig I had, I was able to fly out to Carnegie Mellon and see their... You know, see the students all presenting these different interactive projects. And I was like, oh, wow. Holy moly, I want to do that, right? Like, you know, there was where you make some big things for people to interact with and get feedback. It's like physicalizing a video game, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it is. And it's like, I would love to play with that.
Okay.
So different kinds of large format art, you know, maybe a big format printer that I could print parts of murals with or something. You know,
yeah,
that'd be super, super cool.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, just like, the resources to get into really weird stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. That would be super fun. Well, I feel like that's a good place to close with the hopes we have for the project and the hopes we have for what we would do with the windfall that if it actually was successful, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's say win.
When? Sorry, I said if, didn't I? God,
it's okay.
Bless it. Yes, when it's successful.
We fixed it. It's okay. It's,
okay, good. Well, I want to make sure that as we close that we all feel the suitable amount of shame that is appropriate.
Yes, thank you, society. I'm an artist and I feel bad.
You win. No, but this was awesome, and I hope people enjoyed listening to this discussion. If you did, if you're here, if you're listening to this part, you did. I'm going to say you did.
Yeah, I'd go out on a limb and say, yeah, you fell asleep or you really love it.
Yeah. So that, with that in mind, there are things that we have that we've made that we think that if this conversation was meaningful to you, a great way to let us know would be to support what we do. So, Rob, where can they go to support Word Turtle Island?
So, you can go to wordturtleisland.com, or if that doesn't work for you, you can go to interactive-storyteller.com/wordturtleisland, and you'll learn all about this game. It's got a bit of, you know, pacifism in it, but it's like I wanted to make a violent game, but I didn't want to make a violent game. It's fun. You get to use words to rescue books and readers and then chill out. You know, if you have a tough time in battle, this is one thing I'm really proud of that I built. You know, there's this whole genre called roguelite, and, you know, it has to do with, like, oh, there's really severe penalties for failing. I changed that. So you basically make a bet on yourself of, like, how tough do you want it to be or not when you go into battle. I call it the battle promise system. And you know what? If you want a mellow experience in battle, you can get pretty close to that. There's still stakes, but they're a lot lower and more gentle. Gives you a chance to learn, or maybe that's where you are. Like, you just want to chill, and I want to meet you there. And so I designed this game for that as well. So yeah, just go check out Word Turtle Island, and it's on Steam and Google Play right now.
Mm. How about you? Mine is The Inscrutable Dr. Bear and the Case of the Two-Faced Statue, which is a middle grade graphic novel, spooky fantasy adventure about a little teddy bear who lives in a house full of spirits and ghouls and demons, but they're all friendly spirits and ghouls and demons. And he's the guy that you take your dangerous treasures to. So you got the Gorgon head, you stop the Kraken, good for you. What do you do with the Gorgon head afterwards? You put it in the closet? What if your kids find it? So this is the guy you take those things to, and he stores it safely, which means that his house is full of magical weapons of mass destruction, which means every evil wizard in the world wants in his house. One gets in, the objects get out. And so when he goes out to try to find them, get them back, to keep them safe from the world, he discovers that they are not cursed objects, they are something else. And so it's a meaningful book for me. If I were to describe the style, I would say it's Hello Kitty meets Twilight Zone or Doctor Strange, or, I don't know, like Stephen King novels. It is a little bit on the scary side, but I think it's a lot of fun. And that's at drbear.com. Doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, bear spelled B-A-E-R. Switch those two vowels in the middle. It's the German spelling of bear. Drbear.com is where you can find it. You can also find it on my website, jdrose.com. So it's up for pre-order now. I understand pre-order is important. I don't know why yet, but I've been asking my publisher, I'm like, do we know what our pre-order numbers are? Because I'd like to know if this matters in any way. And that's my own ignorance talking. That has nothing to do with my publisher. But yeah, so please go there and order a book for you and a friend. It makes a great holiday gift, solstice, etc.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun, Drewzy. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rob.
Today we met Nepthu, a man who wanted to become a leader and became one. But Nepthu used his leadership for his own selfish glory, and in the end he got what he deserved. Being a good leader takes a lot of responsibility, but you must also be responsible when you follow a leader. Don't do something wrong or dangerous because someone tells you to. Think before you act. We can't all be leaders, but we can all choose what's right and wrong for ourselves.